So, okay. Anybody, welcome to come up. So, Mary.
I don't have a question, but I have a story, and it's about kind of the sacred in the ordinary. And anyway, Gary and I have gone out the last two mornings to do the point in time count with 600 other people who are counting the number of homeless people. And when we went into this, we thought, well, this is a good thing to do, and we ought to do it. And that was kind of where it was. So we went out, and our territory with our team was along Milpas Street. So we parked at Trader Joe's parking lot and crossed the street. And we saw a man, and we were very excited to go and ask him the survey questions. And he was taking cans out of trash receptacles. And so we said, would you fill out our survey? And he said, no, I'm busy. And we said, well, we have a gift card for you. No, I'm too busy. So we said, well, could we at least have your name so we can, you know, count you? And he said, Jesus. And so we went over. The second person we saw was a woman sitting on a bench. And she was willing to do the survey. And her name was Molly. And we went out. We walked around the neighborhood. And just as it was turning light, we talked to a man sleeping in the doorway of the old post office, and his name was Joseph. And so I, when I woke up this morning, I thought, wait a minute, Jesus, Molly, isn't that? And I looked up on Wikipedia. It's a pet name for Mary and Joseph. So, you know, it's just all around us, right?
I have a similar story to that, if I could just add it. When I was up in Portland, Oregon, we had a couple on New Year's night. They came to our door, and they were from Mexico, and they were homeless, and he said, my name's Jose, this is my wife Maria, and she's pregnant. We don't have a place to say, how do you turn someone away? And the child's name was Jesus. They named it. And they became very, very prominent members of our parish community. In fact, he's an incredible artist. He's an incredible man. Thank you.
I just wanted to thank both of you. But I have a story to tell about Father Larry. Since we're storytelling, and he bit into the apple. Last week I was sitting there and he was behind me, and I thought that Don George was directly behind me. So I'm listening to the speaker, and I got more and more relaxed because I thought, I really like this speaker. I like what he's saying. And so I'm kind of slouched down and my hand drops down and I feel something in my hand. It's flesh. And I think it's Don George's hand, so I give it a squeeze, and it felt funny. And I look down, I've got Father Larry's toes. So I thought, oh, egods, I look at him and I'm repenting, and he lets out this big laugh and everybody starts laughing. So you are, I'm not surprised at the Korean head on your shoulder. My hand went to your toe.
He's just a chick magnet. What can we say?
Oh, I've got a tough question for you, Father Larry. I'm looking at our book in the chapter for today on page 60, and there's a very interesting passage just after the middle of the page. It goes like this. However, for our religious sacraments to survive, develop, transform, and serve their purpose in our interdependent world, we will have to abandon their role as enclosures of God. They are to become gates we can regularly use to help us enter a reality larger than our religion, the precious temple of life. This is interesting because the idea of our sacraments as enclosures of God is a really old one in Catholicism. And it goes back to the locking of our tabernacles and the putting of the little curtain in front of it and all this paraphernalia to kind of reserve, you know, something that encloses God. Are we getting away from that now in the Catholic Church or not? I don't want to make you a heretic by forcing a difficult answer.
I mean, I think we can all see what Pope Francis is leading us. I think he's leading us away from that to the inclusiveness of all people, you know. So I think we just follow that his guidance on that, you know. I guess there's a lot to be said. I don't know. It's a complicated. Does the effectiveness of the sacrament lose its essence if we share it to people who don't believe it? I'm just throwing out an idea.
Yeah, this is a difficult question.
It's a difficult question.
One of the things that I'm noticing in some of our, shall we say, alternative Catholic communities is something called an open table communion, where anyone, wherever you are in your spiritual visit or journey, you know, you are welcome to the table. And they say that on Sunday morning liberally. They say that also in Trinity Episcopal Church. And so I'm just wondering, do you think the regular Catholic Church will ever get to that point or not?
You know, I can't say, Tom.
I mean,
Pope Francis is coming. Every day he comes out with something new. I mean, all we can do is trust in that. I think I'm evading your question. I don't mean to, Tom. I don't have an answer for it. But I deeply respect and thank your question. Yes.
So what came forward for me in that question is the intention behind our invitation to anything. And who is welcome and who is not. So while I know you were talking specifically about the holy sacraments and communion and those kinds of things, if we look at what that represents, what communion is really about, and if we look at what sacrament is, that I am, again, reaffirming my love of God and Christ and all that, again, I would say, what's sacred in your life and where... What are the things that are the sacraments of my life in my day-to-day ordinariness, and where am I excluding people? Where am I not welcoming back to welcoming the stranger? And this whole idea of counting the homeless. You know, I spent many years working with homeless kids, and we would often talk about kids who happen to be homeless, because if you start to become that label, you're already disenfranchised. It's just like the people I work with in prison. We call them the ladies in the women's prison. The guys call themselves the boys in blue because that's the outfit they have to wear. And it's just very humbling to watch people who are really embracing, loving, and being labeled. In the prison, in the men's prison, the men have to wear... labels. So on their arm it says inmate, across their back it says inmate, down their leg it says inmate. That's not true in the women's prison, but it is true in the men's prison. And so I guess what comes up for me is again to ask myself, in those things that are my sacred thing, my birthday, whatever it is, am I welcoming? Is my heart, which to me, heart is the essence of the sacrament. So is my heart an enclosure or is it an invitation?
Regarding the sacrament of the Eucharist, Jesus would not deny his body and blood to anyone.
Like Mary, I was part of the group that went out and were surveying people in parking lots. And as you were talking this morning, I realized how practical really what you were saying is and how challenging it is. Because we went out and spent a lot of time organizing so that we could get as many surveys as we could with the 30 volunteers from faith communities. And you have only two nights. And your goal is to get as many so that you can represent all the different needs, so that when we plan housing, they match the diverse needs. All of that being said, when we got out there, I would say maybe about a third of the people that we had anticipated would be there in these lots at the time we came to do the surveys and were ready to do the surveys actually were there. And there was this point at which I was just kind of like frustrated. What this organization part of me, and then the other and others, and then the other part was like, wow, just being present to these stories we were hearing, even if we were just standing beside the other person serving, was what we were called to that night at that moment. And what I took home with me, like Mary, is these stories that awakened us to the energy to work to transform this whole everything that goes into changing the systems. So thank you for that insight of being present to the now and letting go of that other ego part that wants to organize.
Thank you, Maureen, for all that you do for the homeless and for the disenfranchised in our community, for your incredible witness of life.
Father Larry, I come here in a sense that I might be taking advantage of your friendship, but something happened to me in 1960. It was my last tour of duty on an aircraft carrier. I was in a non-flying status, and I noticed in the wardroom the chaplain, Commander Sweeney, was talking to Lieutenant Kruschfeldt. Had quite a discussion. So I joined them and I just to listen, and he was counseling Lieutenant Kruschfeldt, who was an A-4 Skyhawk pilot in an attack squadron, and the Hancock at that time was the ready carrier with nuclear weapons. We had two nuclear weapons on the hangar deck that could be launched within 3 minutes from the initial point. And Lieutenant Kruschfeldt, going to air intelligence, would find all about the place in China where the initial point would be when he'd start his pull-up, launch the weapon. And he was having trouble dealing with that. And I said at the time to Commander Sweeney, I'm glad I don't have those responsibilities. He turned to me and said, you do. You're on this ship. You're an American citizen. You're an American officer. You have the same responsibilities as Lieutenant Kruschfeldt. I didn't sleep well that night. Now, fast forward, I know that this may not be the proper forum, but we did go and see American Sniper. And I wonder sometimes, is there a place in the middle? If the choice is to pull the trigger or not pull the trigger, whether there are a dozen lives waiting for you to make that decision, how do you make that decision? That's the question. I think is an imponderable. I'm standing here, and even thinking about it sort of shakes me. But it's an issue that's hot today, and that it's a very successful movie. People are thinking about that. We've been the sheriff of the world for a number of years, and perhaps the last few years not so much. Questions of world leadership, questions of defending the poor, feeding the poor, defending the poor. These are all very difficult issues. I don't know if there's easy answers. There probably aren't. I just want to lay that on you. Well, I'm sorry.
Gary, thank you. Thank you. That's an incredible, profound question. You know, there are times we have to make decisions and go forward full force with the decision that we make. But I do believe there's always a middle space. And we have to find that middle space. There is always a middle space. I was struck what's happening in Iraq with the sectarian violence and the Chaldean Christians who are being persecuted there. There was a movement to arm them to fight against ISIS. And the recommendation was, do not arm yourself. Do not fight back. You know, suffer the consequences, but do not fight back. I thought that was very, very prophetic. Very, very prophetic. So.
I wanted to relate an incident that happened several years ago that really pointed out to me how unconsciously or subconsciously we all have exclusiveness. I was dropped off down where, before it was Casa Esperanza, when it was community kitchen, we used to serve down there, and dropped off to go in and help serve. So I'm tapping my way in, and I get up to the doors, and a guy grabs me and says, yeah, get in line. Yeah. He said, you can't go up to the front. Even though you're blind, you got to stand in line. Okay. You know, my first thought was, oh, no, I'm a volunteer. I'm not like you. You know, it was there. And if you would have asked me, I would have denied it. No, we're all one. Way down there, I think we all have to watch that exclusiveness, that it's there.
Yes, Keith, that's a very, very profound point. Thank you, Keith. Yes.
Thank you for that, and I'm reminded, Ram Dass and Paul Gorman, when this book came out and I was in New York, did a 10-week class at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine on this book of service, and part of the requirement was to do additional service alongside the study. And, of course, my whole life working with homeless and runaway, I was like, do I really have to do more service? I mean, I do this. And then I watched past my resistance because I thought I was better than the other people, like I knew all about service. And so I chose to work in a community kitchen that served lunches to 1,000 people every day in New York City down the block from where I worked. And I just remember that we were sharing with Ram Dass. A lot of us were doing stuff like that. And somebody said, yeah, I'm serving meals. And then somebody else said, I'm serving meals to the homeless. And Ram Dass said to us, don't serve meals. Serve eyes. If you are not delivering that meal and looking in the eye of the other person, you're not serving anyone. Please meet them where they are and know that given the right set of circumstances, the tables could be reversed. So.
Father Larry, I guess the question is for you, but it might be for you. You've spent a great part of your ministry in work with the Native American population. And that's a population I have virtually no contact with so far. I want to know, from your work with them, has there been an experience of God that you wouldn't have from, say, a Catholic or a Christian point of view? That like the elephant, you know, and you have a big part of it, has there been a part that could only be mediated by people who are Native Americans?
That's a great question. Thank you very much. And I would say unequivocally, yes. I've had experiences with the Native Americans that I would not have experienced anyplace else but through them and through their own spirituality. And I could give you some stories of that. I don't know if it maybe take too long, but yes, without a question. Okay, I'll share this one story. With the Immokalee Apaches, their sacred group is called the Mountain Spirit Dancers, and we were actually asked to bless Pope John Paul II in his visit to Phoenix, Arizona in 1986. And they're a very, very special group. And I'm saying this very, very humbly, but we had gotten together, and their blessing, when they do a blessing, it's a four-day blessing. They dance at night. They come out. They build a big fire. They have their medicine people around. They're praying very, very intensely for whatever is the person or the thing they're praying for. And we were going to bless Bishop Don Palat, who was given the bishop of Gallup, New Mexico, first Native American bishop ever to be consecrated as a bishop in the United States. Very dear friend of mine. He's since passed away. So we had invited him down to give him our blessing, the Apache blessing. As the service started, the medicine people came over to me, and I say this very, very humbly, but they said, "Father, we want to also bless you." I was taken back. Oh, my gosh. So we had the blessing, and I'll try to explain. So it was outside. It was about 10 o'clock at night. We were on top of this hill, and you could see rain. It was raining all around us. But where we were, there was like a circle, and it wasn't raining where we were. I was sitting there, and I had my hands like this, just kind of in prayer, and I felt something fall, and it went right by my face here, so I could feel it went right by my face, and it fell right in my hands, and I looked down, and it was a rock, and I thought, oh, someone's throwing rocks at me. Anyway, it came from above. It came from above. So that's one experience. I have others, but I guess from a very natural standpoint, maybe that I hope that conveys the depth. But thank you for that question. But yes, there's been incredible experiences. Thank you, but they can only come through Native American cultures or spirituality.
Hello, Father Larry. Okay. These two people are very close to me, so I got the courage to speak up here, even if I'm very conscious of my culture and my addiction and all of those. But Arlene said, no, don't be embarrassed. Anyway, our book is It's All About God. And many of us have experienced those moments that you have described to us. I am a Eucharistic minister since the early 90s at the Old Mission Santa Barbara. And if any one of you would like to go to the Old Mission, you will. When Father Larry is the homilist, he would start his homily with a poem, which are all very good. Well, anyway, two of my three children were altar servers for a very long time at the Old Mission. And in fact, one of the former pastors, Father Vince, had said, if the Pope comes here, David, my middle son, will be one of the servers I will ask to serve. Well, anyway, David, I had always wanted to have a son, a priest for a son, or a son for a priest, however you say that, you know. Because I had wanted to become a nun, but I married a physicist, and then he died. So anyway, these two, it's all about God. So three of my children got married. The eldest son married a Jew, a French-German Jewish woman. The second married someone with no religion. And the third married a Buddhist. I am a Eucharistic minister for a very long time. So I can only love and accept them. I don't proselytize. I don't say this and that, you know. They would come with me to church, and they would, during the consecration, one of them would be sitting, not knowing what is going on there. Well, anyway, so when my husband died, through the hospice where I joined the grief work, for whatever reason, I got to the Jewish Federation Center. And up until now, I'm always a volunteer there. And so the mother-in-law of my son, who is a French Jewish woman, I would email her things about what I'm doing, and that would include the Jewish Federation Center. And they love me there, and I love them. The point of my story is that, and then you mentioned about Michael Koenig. I do attend the Buddhist meditation, mindful kindness, loving kindness, mindfulness, and this compassionate meditation that is done by Dr. Radulay Wininger and her husband, Michael Koenig. Yes, the point of my story is that, and last week, Samir said, you have to meet a stranger. And I have found that in my life that it gives me so much joy. It's like finding Jesus there and here and there. And you had already said that Jesus is everywhere. It's like the sun shines for everybody. It does not include this and that. It's everywhere. And when you said also about Jesus everywhere, I was reminded, I played this tape. Late Father Virgil Cordano has a CD on the rosary. And it is available at the gift shop at the Old Mission. And if you hear that, there will be a very strong passage there where he would say, Jesus is everywhere. He is with you. And I used the tape also when I could not sleep, because it was like a mother singing lullaby to a child that needed to be calmed down, you know. So thank you very much for bringing all of this to us. And I'm so grateful to God, and I thank God for all of you, for you.
Thank you, Yolanda.
Thank you, Yolanda. What comes forward for me, and it was something Father Larry and I had talked about when we were planning, is remember Francis, was the one who touched the leper. And Francis was the one who embraced that which was embraced, as did Jesus. You know, the people that were different, the people that were shunned, the people that were not us, the teaching to me of Christ and of many faiths is, again, that idea of seeing the loving everywhere. There's many, many routes to love. There's many routes to God. In my tradition, we say that the master addiction for humanity, yes, we all have food or cigarettes or alcohol, whatever those, shopping, exercise, we all have them. If you think that you don't have addiction tendencies, you probably have the master addiction, which is control. Control is the master addiction. And I think that when I get into the us-them self-righteousness, and honey, I can get there, I have to just remind myself, who are my models? Who do I want to be? How do I want to be? And Yolanda, your sharing was just, so I had these expectations. You know, this is what my hopes, my dreams were. Prayers get answered, not always in the way that we expect them to be. That's where I go, okay, you know better than I do. I may not understand it in the moment. And faith for me is about, my acronym for faith is finding answers in the heart. And so I go back to my heart, I go back to my prayers, and I go back to asking to have it be revealed for me, to me, if I'm to know. And if I'm not to know, if I don't, that we're back to the mystery of, like, I don't know why this happened. I'm just willing to accept it. And in your story, Yolanda, I hear the beauty of, it's not what I wanted, and having what came to me, I'm loving it all. And that truly is finding God in all of it too. Loving it all, that's a tricky place. That's the place we're called to if we really want to see God in all things.
Oh, it's easier to get down than it is to get up. I have several questions, but I've narrowed it down to one very practical one. My three children were raised in a very affluent situation, But I tried to do my best, and I think I did a good job, thank God, of making sure they were exposed to everything. They did sports at the Boys and Girls Club. They did things at the YMCA, including their preschool, which kind of counterbalanced, you know, the private schools and the tennis lessons and all that BS. And then just fast forward, my kids are all grown now. They all live in Santa Barbara. Two of them have families. I had a young man stop me on the street the other day. He was looking for directions to Alameda Park, which is right down the street from me, because on Wednesday they give out free pizza, which I didn't know. And so I told him where it was, and I went home and I called my daughter, and I said, her 2.5-year-old is Tristan, and I said, we ought to take Tristan down to Alameda Park. They have free pizza. He loves pizza. And I didn't think there was any problem with that. And I had no ulterior motive, just the free pizza and how Tristan would enjoy it, and they've got, you know, the playground right there. And Pilar said, oh, Mom, there's so many homeless people there. Now, she wasn't being snobbish about it. She was thinking of safety and, you know, trying to teach a 2.5-year-old about stranger danger and all that. But my question is, because I really believe in there but for fortune go I. When I have to go up to San Francisco or something, I often take the Greyhound bus because you meet people I would never meet anyplace else, and a lot of them are very interesting and certainly different from, you know, my own runaround circles. How do you expose, and of course my role as a grandmother limits my ability to make decisions for these children. They're not my children. I'm aware of that, sort of.
I'm with you, Grandma.
How do you, the best way to teach anything in life is to expose children to it young. Do you have any suggestions for me particularly, and, you know, the world in general? How do you expose privileged children to the other side of life so that they won't feel like they're, you know, above it, so they won't be snobs? I was always determined my own kids not be tennis snobs because I came from a very humble background. And before I sit down and give you a chance to answer that, I saw a saying the other day that I will leave you with. I know it's getting late. I saw this thing in a catalog that said, wash your hands and say your prayers because Jesus and germs are everywhere.
So, do you have any? I'm actually. Okay. So I appreciate the question, and I don't profess to have an answer. I certainly understand the challenge of my grandchildren are not mine to raise. And that can be tough. And then there's that, you know, control thing all over again. Like, I think I know how it should be done. And that moves me into humility instead of ego. So what occurs to me to expose children to what is out there in the world, the answer that comes for me is service. And maybe the park isn't the first. If mom's not comfortable with it, the first place is have a conversation with your daughter about what you're going for, and you know, share with her what you shared with us to come up with what your real hope is that you want your granddaughter, like your children, to embrace and understand the world and stay safe in it, much like Father Larry's adage to that young Asian girl. But one of the best teachers for me, and I learned it by my parents, is being of service as a group. You know, so having now 2.5, there's not a whole lot she can do, but let me tell you, you bring a 2.5-year-old child into a nursing home, you make a lot of happy people. So coming from a place of service for me eliminates the us them, because I'm willing to be in the usness of it. And I just want to say this too. Service, real service to me, is the infinity sign. So for me, if I am truly of service, I don't know whether I'm giving more or I'm getting more. The delight that the patient that I'm seeing with my cat, this woman, I'm telling you, if the cat could drive, I would be unnecessary. However, the joy that she experiences feeds me. And to me, the real place of service is that apex. That's the communion where I don't know who's giving or receiving more. We're just in it together. And I think one of the concerns in my
counsel around service is to be careful about prepositions. Am I doing for? Am I doing to? Or am I doing with? And that's a place to start to do with, and start with your daughter and your granddaughter in a way that you can do with the greater community. That's my answer.
We were running out of time, but I want to get two quick questions in before we turn. So would you like to come and ask a question? Got to be quick, though. No statements, just questions.
Well, it really isn't a question, but I thought of you, Arlene, when you were talking earlier about how you were in New York City and you were called here. A friend of mine is just finishing up a book. She's an author, and it's set in Santa Barbara. And probably about the second or third chapter, she says, Santa Barbara will call you. And she said, mostly we're called here, and I think it is to give service. I left for the call to be here from Philadelphia back in the 70s, and she from Boston in the 70s, and we met here. And of all things, we met when we were giving service to the Franciscans. And I wasn't Catholic, but I met Brother Mateo, and he said, I was now in the arts here, and he said, wouldn't it be wonderful to do a big opera on the front steps of the mission? So we gathered together all kinds of resources, including the opera people and the choral society and the symphony, and we did opera on the steps 3 times in a row, and then we started giving these concerts inside the church for 9 years. You know, Bob and Claudia Chyla, they were on this committee. And what was wonderful is the money that we made, we gave to nonprofits for help. And so we were able to give back in that way. But it was just interesting to me how this town, like probably most of you who've been implants here, have been called. And I think we all come with service in our heart, and it's necessary to be here. So,
Barbara, thank you. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara.
It's also to avoid the snow.
A yay for the omission in the opera on the steps of the mission. This is a real simple question. Explain good and evil.
Gloria, thank you. We talked about that, and that's a profound issue, okay? And it's a profound issue. Do we recognize the presence of evil? I mean, that's a whole nother issue. And where does that all fit in? I mean, that's a subject totally on itself. Yes.
My question is, how many of you know about Taizé, Franz? And this idea of us and them. In Taizé, it's not us, it's the whole thing. And I wonder how many of you have visited Taizé. Father, have you visited? Could you tell us kind of like how they have communal prayer and get together? I know, you know, the sacrament. How do people that are Catholic, Anglican, Lutheran all handle that?
Just briefly, Pope John Paul II went there and he called Taizé a little springtime. It's an incredible place. It's an interdenominational community in southern France. So he has a great, great love for that place. I mean, he did. And it's an incredible place of spirituality. There's probably 3,000 people, young people from all over the world. I was there on 2 different occasions when the Iron Curtain was coming down. There were people from all over the world coming there to pray. And I believe that what brought down the Iron Curtain was Taizé. These people, anyway. In terms of your question about what's its relationship with Catholicism, we do have a Catholic Mass in the basement of the big church there every morning, and anyone is welcome to come to Mass. They don't have the 3,000 people there. There might be 100 people there, but it is a regular Catholic Mass. And then right after Mass, then they go up and they have their morning prayer service. So where they will have 3,000 people. And
I've been to Taizé too. And can I just add that one of the interesting things about communion, you asked about that, Communion at Taizé on Sunday morning with the ecumenical thing going on. They have their words of institution and so on, and then there's two different altars. There's one Catholic and there's one Protestant. And then there are baskets that go around, and one basket is labeled Holy Communion with bread, and the other basket is labeled Blessed Bread. And so you self-select.
How can we thank you enough for this presentation today? Thank you very much. We'll see you all next week with Reverend Suzanne Dunn, and she'll tell you about the Taizé that they have once a month at the Church of the Beatitudes.
Thank you all. Thank you all for the privilege of being here with you this morning. Thank you.